Welcome to the Science and Paranormal with Dr. Jana and Dr. Elliot, where science meets the unexpected, where we delve deep into the mysteries that straddle the line between scientific inquiry and paranormal. Get ready for a mind-altering journey as we embark on this phenomenal discovery together on United Public Radio Network 107.7 FM.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Science and the Paranormal with Dr. Jana and Dr. Elliot. We're broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM, out of New Orleans and also on Roku TV. And tonight, we will be talking about terrible truth about religious cults.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening to everyone who is watching us and listening to us. Thank you for being with us today, because we are going to uncover very interesting facts about the cults, religious cults. Have you ever been a member of a religious cult, or any of your loved ones, friends, or relatives? Religious cults have long fascinated and troubled society with their enigmatic practices and influence over people. These groups often promise spiritual enlightenment, community, and purpose, yet their methods and ideologies can lead to profound psychological effects on their members. And there's a diversity of religious cults and a wide range of beliefs and behaviors they encompass. So while some cults gain infamy for their extreme actions, and we will see what kind of cults they are a little later, others operate more covertly, exerting control over their members in subtler ways. But regardless of their specific beliefs, cults often share common traits such as charismatic leadership, isolation from mainstream society, and manipulation of their members' thoughts and behaviors. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will explore the dynamics of religious cults and the psychological impact they have on people who become involved with them. So, but in order to talk about it, we need to define, what is a religious cult? How do we understand it, Dr. Elliot?
Yeah, that is, a great question, because a lot of times people don't really, might not necessarily identify that they're joining a cult. They might just feel that they're, you know, joining kind of like-minded individuals. I find it fascinating when you look at the psychological profile of a cult follower. A lot of them do seek some sort of belonging or purpose, and that's what draws them into these cults, especially during vulnerable times in their life. They want to seek that community, identity, that purpose, and the cults can often take a very deceitful way of providing somebody with a sense of belonging. Another kind of psychological profile for a cult follower is that usually they're susceptible to be influenced. And I even have friends that are like that. You know, if I said, do you want to go for a drink tonight or go out for wings? I know who to ask, and do that, because they're very easily influenced. And that's just a normal kind of common thing. So let alone taking advantage of somebody to get them to join, you know, a cult. Obviously, low self-esteem is another kind of common trait that the FBI have profiled on cult leaders, which makes sense, because people feel undervalued. And when you start dealing with members of the cult, you start to feel that sense of community again, and very kind of important. Sometimes there becomes a sense of dependency on the cult. I was watching one documentary about a cult where they were attracting a couple of married couples in there. And all of a sudden, the married couple, the man would be made to work basically farming and building, and the wife now kind of became property of the cult leader. And I know there may be some listeners out there thinking that that's like, how does that happen? Like, you know, but it does happen. And it's terrifying. Same with the kids as well. Like if some cults will actually recruit families with kids in them, and those kids end up becoming part of that cycle of abuse within the cult. So, oh, and there may even be some listeners out there that have been a part of a cult and know exactly what we're talking about. Can you talk to somebody about an organization that they're a part of and you don't get a good feeling about it? They seem to be, you know, very defensive about it. So if you do know somebody that's kind of going down that path, don't be surprised if you run into a little bit of resistance about that. These cults are very good at manipulating people, especially when, like I said, they're looking for a sense of belonging. They have low self-esteem. Some of the dependency can become even crazy as well. Like some cults make you surrender your passports, your identification, your banking, all that stuff. And you can actually become stuck there because they've taken away everything. And you might not necessarily, being in the mix of it, actually realize that. A very, very scary, very dangerous topic for sure.
It is. It is. While the topic is not really scary, we can talk about it from our perfectly comfortable seats right behind the screen. But it gets dangerous when people are out there and they experience that. So while the term cult can be contentious and subjective, it generally refers to a group characterized by its devotion, like you said, to a particular belief system. And it doesn't matter whether it's religious or not, but we're talking about religious. Also, often, if not always, having a charismatic leader and manipulative and controlling tactics. Cults often isolate their members from the outside world and enforce strict adherence to their doctrine and exert influence over all aspects of their followers' lives. So just like you said, they control everything, and especially the why there is such a control exerted over a large number of the populations is the financial gain. Also, the financial gain. There is also the psychological dynamics on the side of the cult leader. And you have already discussed wonderfully on the psychology of people who attend or get into those religious cults. On both of their sides, the allure of religious cults lies in their abilities to fulfill what? Fundamental human needs for belonging, like you said, purpose and meaning. People flock to places like that because we, in our Western society, we lack this kind of sense of belonging, right? And lately, the purpose has gone out of the roof, right? And people are constantly looking for meaning. So people who join cults often do so during vulnerable periods of their lives. They are seeking answers to existential questions or a sense of community.
We had a couple of comments already tonight, Dr. Yana. Mark Cameron tells us, great show. Gave us a thumbs up. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
IG asked us about Scientology, how it became a religious organization, and in our opinion, is it a religious cult? I have heard lots about Scientology, and I have heard it referred to as a religious cult before, for sure. Ugh.
We are starting with a serious organization. Oh my God, what an interesting question. And thank you, by the way, for that fantastic question, because this topic is actually, it's very close to me. It's in LA, and I passed by the Church of Scientology so many times. And I even witnessed some of the action in the bookstore, which I can relate to you right now. So what is Scientology? Scientology, now it's called the Church of Scientology. It is a set of beliefs and practices invented by American author Ron Hubbard. And it is often referred to as cult, a business, a religion, also a scam, new religious movement. So Ron Hubbard was a very interesting individual who created and established this organization. He created an idea called Dianetics, which became a form of a therapy. But later he was bankrupted. And later in 1954, he started his Church of Scientology. And it wasn't so easy also for him to gain the status of the church for his organization, but he was getting, and his organization was getting enormous amounts of money, loads and loads, truckloads of money. And he did not want to pay any taxes, so he applied for the church status or religious organization status, and he got it. So all of the billions of dollars that flocked to them are not even taxed. So this is very interesting. However, it always surprised me how this kind of organizations, they have a shape, not a shape, but the organizational structure of a pyramid, of the financial pyramid. And this is what we have, a psychological pyramid. So what happened here in this incredible, incredibly dangerous as of now organization, they did believe in reincarnation and still do. Reincarnation and traumatic events that cause problematic so-called engrams in mind that can be removed only through an activity called auditing. And of course, the church charges you for auditing, where they ask you all sorts of information. And then you're supposed to completely and openly discuss it. And then in about a couple of years, you get cleared of that. It really reminds me of the Catholic Church practice of, what was that, forgiveness of sins, Dr. Elliot? You're a Catholic boy. What is it?
Forgiveness of sins?
Forgiveness of sins in the Middle Ages.
In the Middle Ages. Oh.
In the Middle Ages, yeah. So when you go and you pay the fee to the church and then they forgive your sins.
Come on. I know there's confession.
No,
they charge for confession back then?
It was not you know what? It's gonna come to me. It went into my subconscious mind. It will definitely come to me. But not confession. However, you're absolutely right. In confession, people would go and they would talk to the priest, of course, to tell him everything. But then confession, it wouldn't take about a couple of years, right, for the sins to be forgiven. Indulgence, there, people, indulgence. That was right. Indulgence, indulgencia. There. So when you would come, there's a special paper that was given by the church to people, signed by the bishop or whoever religious person that was there. And the person, the rich predominantly, that would get the forgiveness of their sins.
I can actually say I've never heard of that. I just looked it up too. I was trying to find the name before you did. The sale of indulgence. That's as a right. Catholic, I've never heard of that before. I'm not surprised. Nothing surprises me, but that's really interesting. The sale of indulgence, it was called.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
So
back to the Scientology, there's nothing that officially has deemed it, like you said, it is a legitimate religion, recognized as a legitimate religion. Nothing that's kind of deemed it as a cult, but former members have said that it's very, and it does have the shadows of cult behavior from an organization standpoint. So really, really interesting. I keep seeing TikToks where people are outside of the, probably the place you were just talking about in Los Angeles, where they are trying to stop people from going in there to find out more about it, because it's, you know, they feel that it's so dangerous.
Yes. I was, when I lived in Missouri, I came across a group of people that surprisingly looked all very similarly. And then they spoke in a similar manner. They laughed in a similar manner. And their eyes expressions also had were very similar. And I found out that they escaped the cult that moved from California to Missouri at the time, and the younger generation did not want to live that way anymore, and they escaped it. And interestingly enough, that when I was talking to them, they did relate to me this manipulation and coercion, and all of their money and possession belonged to the commune, but they never wanted to live there. So and that was associated with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So while not all of the Seventh-day Adventist churches, of course, are cultish, but some of them, they split off, and they do possess this kind of spirit, culture spirit, that is very oppressive to the people who attend those churches. So back to the Scientology. I remember that I once was walking in Hollywood, and I like psychological testing as a psychologist. So here's what happened. As I was walking by one of the bookstores, I saw people standing outside and luring people in into that the bookstore with the psychological testing that, oh, we have an answer for you. Just take the psychological test. And they were so nice and friendly. And of course, I said, why not? It wouldn't hurt. It's a bookstore, nothing else. And I went in. Mm-hmm. Only to discover that there was only one book everywhere in the store written by Ron Hubbard. That was the Dianetics. Wow. So, yeah, they asked me and a friend of mine to proceed to a small little bitty room to watch a video. And I did, went there, like something about the organization. And I started noticing within probably 8 to 10 minutes, I started noticing that I was being hypnotized. And at that time, I was, of course, I was practicing hypnosis. I knew what it was. I was being hypnotized, and I could feel that I was being dissociated, and there was a feeling of derealization, and I walked out of the room. So there were people standing there like guards outside of the room, and they said, why don't you just go back and finish watching? I said, I don't want to watch this film, this movie, because in my understanding, there was, what is it called, like in filmmaking, that 38th frame or something, or I forget, I may be wrong, that when the movie is made, there's an extra frame that we do not notice, of course, but that has the information and that falls in our subconscious to program you. That yep. is a lot that is used in advertisement in different kinds of films and movies. So I recognized that and I stepped out, and they were very insistent for me to get back. So that was a violation of my boundaries, my personal space. And I said, I need to leave. And what they did, in fact, they separated me and my friend and started talking to us separately. Of course, like divide and conquer. And but we kept close, and I said that we need to leave. And I saw a lot of people in a different room already finished with their psychological testing and waiting for the miraculous solution for their problems, of course. But at that time, I noticed, because I already had a frame of reference in Missouri from people who escaped that cult, I've noticed at the time that all of them who were in that bookstore, right? They right. all looked alike. All of them have spoken to us and the rest of the people who were speaking to different people who they asked to come in. They all had the same expression in their eyes. And I became really concerned about it. And forcefully, I made my way out because they wouldn't let me go. And there was a couple standing right outside of that supposed bookstore. They were probably in their early 60s. And they just grabbed that by our hands. And they said, please don't go in there. We, after 20 years, escaped this cold. It was so horrible. Now we're just standing here and asking people not to go in, not to repeat our mistake.
Wow.
Yeah, and that is not anything horrible that actually happened to me. I was able to recognize that something is wrong because I already had the frame of reference, right? What about those people that don't know? What about those vulnerable people that are looking for solutions that will get in?
We talked about with the low self-esteem, looking for the sense of belonging.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And they will go in. They will sign up. And what happens with the Scientology is people do sign up, and there's so many different tiers. They sign up, and then they are prohibited to talk about their experiences. They are prohibited even to talk to their loved ones. And if your loved one is going to say something negative about you, about your experience, you are prohibited even to seeing them. A lot of families have been alienated and never saw their children, parents, brothers and sisters, friends, and they would be so they would be vehemently defending this organization and going against their families, losing all of their money, losing their identities, their money, completely psychologically abused because they practice so-called communal living. And we know what communal living is. Well, there's some of them are pretty benevolent. A lot of them are not. So we have to be so careful in our vulnerable situation not to go to places like that. And if you just look at Ron Hubbard, who invented this organization, who established it, he was also an association at the very beginning with people like Aleister Crowley, for example, the establisher of Telema, right? And who was Aleister Crowley? He was a pedophile. And we all know that, right? It's a fact. So what happens, he was also associating with the Church of Satan. So when we openly, not openly, when we so willingly go into such organizations without researching the origin of the organization, the origin of the so-called religious books, we are in such danger, like you said, Dr. Elliott. And that danger cannot be exaggerated. It is very dangerous. We have only one life, and it's I'm concerned about the young people, teenagers. I'm concerned about young adults and people already in their 40s and the middle ages and older people who would like to change something in their lives. You got to be really, really careful. And in addition to everything, Ron Hubbard had the paranoid schizophrenia. So
I didn't know that.
Because his wife, that was a widely publicized case of divorce, and she said that he had paranoid schizophrenia. He was in association with the clinics. Of course, he wasn't talking about himself at the time, but he was diagnosed with that. We have to be really careful who we follow, what information we get into our minds.
It's interesting too, because I don't know if you've heard of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Have you heard of that one?
No. Somehow I missed that. Enlighten me.
It's a real thing. It's called the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. It was started in the U.S. actually, and it was kind of a movement that was against them teaching certain things in the classroom. It's kind of done like as a funny kind of thing. It was to kind of let people know about, critical thinking and things like that. But it's actually considered a recognized religion in some places and following like all over the world. And they do funny, you know, like it's kind of a funny thing. I've been to their website. They have kind of like a 10 commandments, but it's different. Their logo is like a spaghetti monster and all that stuff. But it goes to show you that you can create and register anything, and sometimes it gets accepted by governments, as being like a legitimate organization. So some places have actually legally recognized it. For example, the Netherlands is one place, of course, with my Dutch heritage. very nice people over there, but it's recognized over there, and New Zealand as well. Which is interesting. So, you got to be careful with what organizations you join.
Absolutely, because if we look who is a representative of the Scientology, what is a Scientology? So interesting that he decided, Ron Hubbard, to make it look really professional, and he called it Scientology, which is the same thing, the science of knowing, essentially knowing of knowing. Mm-hmm. And who is the primary face? Tom Cruise yeah. is a face, and
don't quote me on it, but I think John Travolta was
John Travolta, exactly, yeah. Oh, he still is, and is he wanted to get out of that organization, but they wouldn't let him. The thing is, they have so much on you, so much dirt on you, because you're willingly letting out that all that information, which is recorded, and evidently, he didn't want all of that dirt to come out publicly, so he's still there. So it is not easy to leave that organization. It is a very manipulative organization. People vanish without a trace. So we have to think about it. We have, looks like Dylan said that Anthony LaVey Church is a real religion. Yes, it is a religion. Anthony LaVey, in the 60s, he established the Church of Satan. And while the Church of God has the right to exist, so Churches of Satan is also a real religion. Why not? And we all fight for the spot under the sun to survive and to live and to enjoy our lives. So whatever works for people. And something else that one of the comments that I saw here. Okay, well, it will come to me. There is another organization which, in my mind, is pretty much cultish like. That is Christian Science. And a lot of people can say and argue with me over that, that it is really not. I had a very interesting personal experience there that I can tell. What is the Christian Science? Christian Science was established as a church of Christ, the scientist. So Christ became a scientist, unbeknownst to him, by Mary Baker Eddy. And a very interesting organization. She died in 1910, I believe. She was a very interesting woman. Just like, I believe, in many people who established churches like that, she also had a very disorganized life, and she was a very violent person. For a while, she couldn't find herself, and she argued and fought with everyone. Nevertheless, she established this church of healing and transformation. She believed that the prayer itself can heal the person, which I believe also that is a possibility, of course. So I didn't know anything about the Christian Science. And then again, it's a science to sound more professional. I remember that I was in Boston once, and there was this church next to me. I decided to go and investigate it. So I went in during the day, and there was no service at the time. But there were groups of people that were giving tours of the church. And my group had this elderly lady, probably in her mid-70s, or maybe late-70s, with a really gray hair, somewhat petite. And she really loved giving all these tours. She was so proud of her involvement of this church. And evidently, she deemed me as very disrespectful when I kept asking her of the essence of the healing and how the healing actually takes place. I want to know the science behind that. As a courteous person, by asking this question, she thought that that was I didn't belong in her group, and she asked another person to take me over. I thought like something was really wrong, and I said that if I offended you, I do apologize, but I didn't do anything but ask that question. What is the science behind the healing itself? The history of the church is one thing, but what is the science behind it? She became really mad at me just for asking that question. And wow. She passed me along to a different person. And I, while I was there, and a different lady took me over into her group, I've noticed that that church inside didn't have any regalia. There was nothing that would be indicative of the church of Christ, I would say, or Christian church of anything. There was nothing at all.
Really?
Nothing at all. No crosses. There was no statues like in Catholicism. There was nothing, is that not even inscriptions on the walls. There was nothing.
No stained glass.
They're just images, bare walls, you know? So I thought, okay, this is very interesting. However, after that, I went there with a friend of mine. We were there for the conference, and we decided to investigate that together. So after that, she didn't ask any questions, so she stayed with that elderly lady. And at the end, I said, you know what, let's go explore the rest of the church. So we did. We went around, and there was a place that a simulation of a globe, and they charged $10 to go in and experience that, to look at the earth from the inside, supposedly. And as I was approaching that, I've gotten really heavy feeling, because in the brainwashing techniques, in the psychological influencing, this kind of dome structure is much easier to manipulate you. It's much easier to put you in the state of altered consciousness. I avoided that, and I said, I don't really want to go. But they kept insisting, even in this place, they kept insisting, nearly touching my hand and dragging me into that place. I said, no. My friend and I decided to hurry up and leave. So as we were almost running out of that place, at the very end, right next to the doors, there was a hallway, and the big, big image of Mary Baker, who established this church, in her already late 70s, I think she died when she was 89, with her gray hair, kind of very composed lady of the beginning of the 20th century, 19th right. century lady. And when I saw that, I stopped dead on my tracks. I couldn't move. I couldn't move. And I just had to read what it said. Like, who was that woman? Because I did not know. I never saw her ever. And I read it was Mary Baker. And I realized that Mary Baker died in 1910. However, she was a spitting image of this elderly lady that was given a tour of the church. And then I thought, oh, the reincarnation. So perhaps that Mary Baker, she could not let go of her church because that was her baby and she was really a strong-willed individual. Perhaps she reincarnated in someone else to continue to be in her church. And that was the spitting image of that lady. I thought 100 years did not just evaporated in front of me. And I found myself in the 19th century. That was so bizarre.
Wow, and that's interesting.
And I could feel my mind being cloudy. I couldn't think straight. And I said, this is the thing. I have to get out of here. And I did. So, but that experience was very strange to me. Thinking about the reincarnation.
That is very strange. You just never know. You seem to have had a couple of run-ins. I can't recall myself having a run-in with an organization that would be cultish, but I know my mom's friend had become involved with a cult before, and it certainly impacted her life even to this day. She's not the same person that she was, for sure. We do have them here in Canada. One actually has a Russian tie. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. The Dukhobors. Have you heard of that?
Dukhobore. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was kind of started in Russia, and then they immigrated to Canada. They still exist, too. The last time I saw our 2021 census that we did still had 1,600 members associating with that, but it used to be even more popular in the early 20s. But they kind of do some strange stuff like arsons during their protests, and they're really extreme against like the government and societal norms. Almost like it's not your traditional cult. It's almost, kind of like a radical fashion that has cult-like tendencies. But we do have, organizations that are dangerous here in Canada. So you have to be careful. You actually, where you live is where one of the when I was growing up, one of the biggest cults that was in the media for a long time resided, which was Heaven's Gate.
They were
in San Diego, California. So do they still talk about it around there?
No, I don't hear anything about it.
I remember growing up as a kid, that was big news when that all happened.
It was established by Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles in the 70s. They
were a UFO religious cult.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. A UFO religious cult. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were a UFO religious cult. And, I remember they had that mass suicide. It would have been around the time I started PPRI, actually, in 1997, I believe.
1997, exactly.
Yeah, that's when I started PPRI. And I remember following it because it was in the media. It was big news up here, for sure, talking about the mass suicide. That had happened, and it had to do with the comet Haley Bopp. Hale Bopp. Yeah, I called it Haley Bopp. Hale Bopp. It was quite the case. And
they wanted to reach the higher plane of existence, of course, like to leave their bodies behind. And 39 members of Heaven's Gate committed mass suicide in a coordinated event aimed at achieving this goal.
And the leader told them that there was a UFO in the comet's tail, and that UFO was supposed to pick their bodies up, and bring them to a better place, which obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, that's very interesting because there is an abuse of power. Cult leaders show their immense power over their followers, often with little or no accountability at all. they dictate every aspect of their members' lives. I believe that there's the case of mass hypnosis going on there. What do you think, Dr. Elliot?
I think it's possible, but especially where you're trained in hypnosis and you found the video that you were watching. Was that with Scientology? Was that a Scientology kind of video?
Which video?
The one you felt that they were using hypnosis in the video? Was that a Scientology video?
I don't remember what I sent you.
It was when you and your friend got lured into the bookstore and had to watch
Yeah. It is Scientology. And
So like if you felt that there was, you know, some hypnosis going on with there, I wouldn't be surprised if it is being used as one of the methods to kind of control people.
Well, absolutely. And I'm sure that Ron Howard really investigated that and that became a part. It is impossible to do, to perform such or impose such crazy manipulation on people without possessing the manipulative hypnotic tricks. It is absolutely possible because you bypass the critical factor. And what you do, you ensnare their souls and their minds, and people let go of everything. They just look at you as their savior. And how many saviors have we had over the centuries, right?
Yeah, it's almost like everyone's trying to become like the next Jesus Christ with their following. And, you know, some of these people, actually one of the cult leader traits is that they're very charismatic. And you see this with... you know, cult leaders, they do seem very charismatic and they're able to present well. They're very persuasive. They think, you know, quickly on their feet. They do have some really good qualities about them if it was used for a good purpose. Another thing that the FBI picked up on when they profile cult leaders is they're narcissistic. A lot of them have very high level of narcissism or that grandiose self-importance that comes with, you know, being a leader. And obviously they're very good at manipulation. They're almost like, you know, they almost become experts in it between their charismatic behavior, their persuasiveness, their narcissistic traits where they don't, you know, really have any sort of, feelings on, you know, what they're getting, like they know that they're going to be swindling this old couple to give them all the money and become part of the church, but they have no, you know, remorse with that.
Psychopathy is the main factor here. Yes, and social personality is exactly. Yes.
Yeah, and they certainly lack the empathy as well, because otherwise, you know, they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't, especially like a lot of people sell their homes and take out all their investment money. I've heard all kinds of different horror stories where, you know, poor couple saved up all their money and they withdraw it all and give it to the organization. And at the end of the day, like you said, you ran into that old couple out there. They probably lost everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Which is, you know, really, yeah, really, really scary and really unfortunate. But some of these cults, like, it's not just, you know, taking your wife and taking your daughter and reproducing. Like, they do some pretty wild stuff. I know with Heaven's Gate, they had a belief about not like engaging in kind of like sexual activity. They would actually castrate members. They believed that it was part of how to get to the higher ascension. And they practiced celibacy. So it's there's some like really, really dangerous beliefs in some of these organizations.
Absolutely. What we must understand, as human beings, we are wired for connection. Of course, most of us wired for empathy. However, we may not even distinguish when the charm that is exuded by some people, by those charismatic people, may not be an authentic charm. meaning that those people do not have your interests at all at their heart. They have only the interest to manipulate you and take everything that you have from you, including also your soul, because people lose their identity completely. So this extreme charm, which is a part of psychopathic people, is not the charm that we're looking for. We have to be able to look at those people also in the eye and look at them, whether their smile is a genuine smile, because psychopaths, they lack these emotions. And look, even not even the psychopathic behavior, just look at the people with whom you're talking and look at their eyes. If they smile genuinely, they will have wrinkles in their eyes. If they do not, it's a fake smile made by the mouth only, and not with the eyes. So look for signs like that as well. And don't be fooled by fake charm, because even professionals who work with psychopaths, who research the psychopathy in their professional life, they can also be fooled by psychopaths, because we're all wired for human connection and they can fool us as well. So let's educate ourselves and not fall for this kind of behavior.
Yes. We're broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM from New Orleans, and also on Roku TV. And I see we have a good point. Yeah, Charles Manson, Dylan, I would say that he was also a very charismatic leader as well. It kind of fits that cult profile. But yes, with Heaven's Gate, that's what they believe. They believe that Earth was about to be recycled or wiped out. And they felt that their body, which they referred to as vehicles, just kind of contained their soul. So if they committed the mass suicide, once Halley-Bopp comet flew by Earth, the UFO was hiding in its shadows and would pick their souls up, and they would ascend to a higher level, which, like I said, obviously was just a very big tragedy and something that I remember as a kid growing up. For sure.
Yeah, when I was a child, I also remember broadcast on the radio of Aum Senrikyo at the time, that was founded by Shoko Asahara in Japan in the 80s. And it also blended the elements of Buddhism, Hinduism, and apocalyptic prophecy. I remember that it gained notoriety in 1990s. When they carried out a sarin gas attack in Tokyo subway system, killing 13 people and injuring thousands. So, but I remember which deemed to be the murderous and terroristic organization, I remember all of these meditations and subtle music that was played on the radio. And those were the times, if you remember, in 1990s, of very unstable times for many countries, and especially that was for the former Soviet Union, that was disintegrated in 1991. So that was very difficult time for that. And having this kind of organization broadcasted live, a lot of people were listening to that. A lot of people believed in what was being said. So it's so crucial to gain information before you even listen to anything. That's before you even entertain the idea of listening to something. Just investigate. And if you agree with the with the ideology of the organization, then get a flag into your hands and just go and defend the organization. So
another big cult that we always hear about too is actually, you had kind of mentioned it about the branches that separate from the Seventh-day Advent church. One of them was the Davidian Davidian branch in Waco, Texas, that was run by David Koresh. And I've watched multiple documentaries on that, just because from a course, my perspective, I was really interested in how the FBI handled that location, that investigation. I know they received, a lot of criticism about it. And there was a huge standoff that lasted, I think it was almost 2 months. And that one ended terribly as well, because the compound was set on fire, and multiple people, including David Koresh, had perished in that fire. So they had kind of some of your classic cult classifications, though. They had a very charismatic leader. Koresh was very good at manipulating people. They also had some kind of apocalyptic beliefs as well. And they also practiced the same type of living that you had previously mentioned here this evening, the communal living. And Koresh had 25 children, I think, which is unreal. I couldn't imagine. I've got two. So I can't imagine having 25 kids. But he also kind of had that, what's that old saying about having the village help raise?
Oh, yeah, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. It takes a village.
Yeah. So he also had a village behind him to raise those 25 kids as well. So
He was also established that the organization with Viktor Khutov. He was Bulgarian, also the founder of this Davidian Seventh-day Adventist organization. This is so interesting to me because I remember with a friend of mine, I had very similar experience to what I've already shared with you on those two occasions. A friend of mine who was never religious, and all of a sudden I hear her in Michigan going to one of the churches, and she started sharing with me because she really wanted to experience this altered states of consciousness. She was really interested in that, and anywhere that she went, she wanted to do that. And all of a sudden, she got this interesting opportunity, and she went to that church. And I visited her there in that church. And to my surprise, while I was so happy for her to finally have found the church that she really liked, but she was so new to Christianity, so she did not know even the history of Christianity. She didn't know anything about Christianity. So that was the first church that she went to. And it happened to be a cultist church, because when I went in, all people around me, they all had the same expression in their eyes. While it is difficult to describe the feeling, they all had the same expression, the same kind of eyes, same expression. I was just listening recently to the Israeli psychologist, Sam Vaknin, and he's a specialist, fantastic specialist in borderline personality disorder and narcissism. He said a very interesting thing, for which I'm so grateful to him, that he said when borderline splits, and of course borderlines, people with borderline personality disorder, very similar to the dissociative personality disorder, when they almost have the different alters that take place in the place of just one, your own personality. So he said when borderline splits, there is a brief enlargement of a pupil. He says that he does not sign up for this black eyes or anything, the paranormal stuff. But from the psychophysiological perspective, the pupils enlarge. And that gives the picture of black eyes. So that was so incredible to me, because this is what I experienced seeing there. Although in that church, people did not have borderline, of course, like all of them, how could they do, right? They had the same experience in their eyes, the expression in their eyes. They all spoke the same. And being a seer, I saw this huge entity. huge entity filling the entire church. And every time that entity would move, there would be a crazy upheaval in the church. So as soon as the entity moves, there's a crazy upheaval. People start speaking in tongues. They would just start moving, running around, screaming. The music would be playing awfully loud at the stage. So I had to get up and leave. And I warned her, this is not the right place. You can go to a church where it's a legitimate church and you will be welcome there. And people would have your interests, have a benevolent attitude toward you. But she did not listen to me. So what happened? She cut ties with me for the whole year for telling her that, because like you said, that people do defend their beliefs. And yep. When you ask them and you tell them, try to open their eyes, so listen, this is not the place for you. This I know and I see, and you don't listen to my expertise in this, right? So yep. Get out of it. No. So about a year later, when she resumed talking to me, she said, you were so right, but I had to experience that myself. But the good thing that the church closed, the pastor ran away with all the money of the church. The church closed.
That's kind of a good thing for the victims that were sucked into it, though. Like you said, let him take his money and go, because he probably just saved, you know, 20, 30, 40 people. A lot of long-term damage.
Exactly. So, but yeah. No, people wouldn't listen.
No, and that's just it with these groups. They're so influential that they're going to cut you out and cut family members out, like you said, before they cut out this organization. That's how powerful and dangerous some of these cults can be.
And the thing is, it is not just that they can influence people that don't have any education, like somewhere from rural areas who don't experience much of the city life, right? Or don't know much about what happens, right? They're so used to their inner circle and people that they know, they don't venture out. This is not the case. They can affect people that are progressive people, even PhDs. They can influence your mind regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your level of education, regardless of your beliefs.
It's true. There was another strange kind of cult as well in California. You guys are terrible for your cults out there.
We love them.
This one was called Children of God, or also known as the Family International. And that's what I mean. Like, you have the Flying Spaghetti Monster Church, and then you've got, you know, the Family International. So, like, if you hear somebody say, hey, I'm part of Family International, oh, that sounds like a really nice organization. You know, like Family International. Like, oh, great, tell me more about it. And then next thing you know, you're going down that wrong path. But they practiced something in the mid-70s called flirty fishing, where the cult member would get the women of the organization to go out and engage in sexual relationships with non-members to try and attract new members and donations. And again, this was kind of an offset of Christian religion as well. So it was loosely based around some of the Catholic practices, I guess. Unfortunately, it seems to be a lot of these religions are related back to Catholicism.
But how is it different from espionage, from the CIA, KGB, when there's this practices of sleeping with the opposite party? They're widely practiced, right? Mm. So men and women would practice that to extort the information, to lure it out, lure it out.
Yeah. No, and you're right, spy agencies do that too, where they put politicians or certain people that they're trying to infiltrate into very compromising positions. Send them into a restaurant, for example, an attractive male or an attractive female, and start to cultivate a relationship. And next thing you know, they're getting information from them or turning government. It's done by the governments, you know, for sure.
How interesting is that the governments that specifically and intentionally train people for this kind of job, right? They employ the sophisticated tactics to manipulate people's thoughts and emotions, and the same in the cult organization. So the cults, of course, it is not only for the money, right? Because they do believe in the doomsday. They do believe in their schizophrenic ideas that the aliens are coming and we need to get on their ship. They're going to come and pick us up. And people believe that. So through indoctrination, gaslighting, and cognitive cognitive difficulties come with cognitive dissonance, that's for sure. Yeah, cult leaders, they just...
Late at night, we get cognitive difficulties.
Yes, we do. But that's a cognitive dissonance, yeah. So they distort reality and suppress people. And they leave people vulnerable for exploitation. So that is so interesting that there are such crazy parallels between espionage and cult leaders' tactics.
Well, it's not too far off, really, if you think about, with our military members, for example, or even me being a former RCMP officer, which is a paramilitary organization, there's a form of brainwashing that occurs when you join an organization like that. You know, the military is very ready to follow their rules. You have to live a certain way. And usually you can tell who, you know, when you're out in public, you can kind of tell like who's military, who might be a police officer, just because you are built like that. And it starts from basic training. You know, when you go in there, they break you down, and then they build you back.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happens. You all come in there as individuals. They break you down. They build you back up the way they want you to, and they send you all out there with, you know, similar mentality, similar beliefs, exact same training. And then you serve them for all, you know, that time, whether it's 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. And when you get out, some people still have that mindset. Like a lot of people that I work with are not happy with the organization, but they're too afraid to leave. All they know is policing. And I always tell Sarah that it's like turning their badge. It's like their badge is their whole life, but you know, life continues on. I've been retired since 2020 now. And you know, I fairly busy with the paranormal. It keeps me doing something while Sarah's still working. Because you know, I'm retired from work, I call it. So this is like fun work, you know, to get on here with our listeners and you and chit chat about the paranormal, which is a passion of mine, and run a nonprofit organization that's involved with the paranormal. But there's a lot of people that just can't kind of break that mentality. They're kind of, you know, brainwashed to kind of continue being part of the military or part of the police force. So it's a real thing. There's certain, you know, organizations out there that, you know, very influential and can kind of really control your life. And you just got to be careful, like you said. But the other problem is that usually when people are involved in the mix of this, they don't see it. Like we see it, but when they're involved in it, they just don't see it. It's almost like being in an abusive relationship.
That like, is why.
I would say you got to leave that guy, you got to leave that girl. But
yeah.
They just don't see it until they've, you know, made the decision finally to break up. And then they kind of have time to reflect. And then they're like, just like your friend said, you were right. I didn't listen to you. You were right.
So what happens there, it is a severe case of gaslighting. So with the gaslighting, people's reality gets continuously denied by the abuser or by this religious cult, not the organization, but the cult, religious cult, or any type of a cult for that regard, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they rely, they base their reality on the reality of the gaslighter. So they don't see it. It's easier for them to even agree with a gaslighter who is providing this reality definition for them, right, by denying their own, than to continuously fight for their own understanding of the reality. Besides, there is a component of conformity. Everyone else in the organization behaving in a certain way, I must do the same. Besides, if people are not really aware of the manipulation techniques, they will not know that when they are told there are many people and they do this, many people that come to our organization, they feel happy and fantastic, and many of their problems are solved, if not all of them. They feel so happy and content, and all of us are this way and that way. And what do you do as a human being? You want to conform because you don't want to stand out. You don't want to be different. You don't want to even look foolish because you don't understand something. So what you do, you conform, and that becomes your new reality. So that's what happens with gaslighting.
For sure. And cults, they have certain, you know, practices that they'll do with non-conformers as well. Remember, part of the reason these individuals have decided to join the cult is to be one, to find like-minded individuals, to find a sense of belonging. And what happens when you start to not conform with their doctrines or go against the leader's, you know, orders or anything like that, you start to face social pressure and shaming within the cult themselves, and they can actually isolate you and from the cult. So now you were isolated to begin with, and now you've been isolated from the cult. So it kind of reinforces negatively a way for them to kind of keep control over you. Some of them get, you know, even more crazy with actual like forced, there'll be punishments, for example, like physical punishments, threats, intimidation, especially if you're there with your kids, you know, they can use, things like that, your kids against you. They can use financial exploitation against you. There's multiple different things that they can kind of use to kind of keep you conforming as well. And that's why when people do escape these cults and they tell their story, usually it's not anticlimactic. It's not like they just opened the door and walked out. Usually it's pretty dramatic how they ended up coming to realize what's happened to them and how they got out of that situation.
Yes. And the dangerous thing is that if us as adults we already established the critical thinking, hopefully, by 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, right? The young generations have not got this opportunity to do so. And they can be easily lured into those organizations under the demise of benevolence, right? Having the answers for everything, openness, and all sorts of promises. So we have to be so careful with that, because that's in the times of vulnerability, we'll believe almost anything that can solve our problems. So we have to develop this critical thinking and desire to investigate the information that stands behind the religious statements, right? Or statements of any organization for that regard. It's crucial.
Yeah, was wondering what the average age for a cult member is. And it says that they like to target individuals in their late teens and early 20s. So like you said before, that critical thinking is fully developed, or, you know, a lot of people that age are going through transitions in their life or are still struggling to find out who they are and what they want to do. And, you know, lo and behold, this organization comes along and provides them with what they're missing. So definitely a very dangerous age group. Makes you my daughters are 14 and going to be four. So I still got some time to worry about that, but it makes you, you know, pay attention to what they're doing. And I know Sophia, my oldest daughter, her mom is, you know, very much into monitoring her social media and very involved in her life to make sure, you know, that there's nobody out there trying to manipulate them. Because especially the youth today on social media, I've read a lot of like tragic articles where people have been, they've committed suicide because of, you know, they sent like a naked picture of themselves, you know, and they didn't feel like they could come to their parents to talk to them. They were just too embarrassed when the scammers would say, you know, we're going to email all your friends and your family and all this stuff. And they feel like they have no way out. So I actually did have that conversation with my oldest daughter and said, you know what, no matter what happens, like you can always come to mom and dad and like, we'll help you fix the problem. Because I don't want them to feel like they had no other option.
Absolutely.
And again, they used very similar tactics. When you break it down, really, it's fascinating. It's interesting because it's a lot of psychological things. Like when you start to pick apart the behaviors and what's being said and how they're doing it, it all falls back into the wonderful world of psychology, which has always been an interest of mine. That's why most of my formal education is in psychology and sociology. I find that stuff just absolutely fascinating. And human behavior is fascinating in general.
Yes, because I've also been so interested in human behavior, what stands behind it, what makes us do what we do. Mm. And I've been investigating this manipulation, how people manipulate each other. For many years now, and always fascinates me how even my critical factor can be bypassed sometimes, because I don't want to be on the lookout all the time, right? I don't want to be vigilant all the time. Sometimes I just want to be human.
Yeah.
And not a walking encyclopedia, right? Sometimes I can be taken at the times when I'm not so vigilant. Mm. But what are about those people who know nothing about manipulation, right? And our culture also instilled this desire in us to be conformist, to go along with the opinions of society, which may not even be as benevolent as they may seem. So...
yeah, you're right. There's definitely, you know, societal pressures to for us to conform, considered the norm, for sure. And it becomes no different when individuals are recruited by these cults, because that becomes their new norm. And so when you see the other cult members listening and obeying and doing what they're told and following the doctrine, you kind of follow suit, because otherwise you're going against the norm. Now
and then you're excluded from the community, right? You're excluded, then you're an outcast.
Yeah,
you don't want to be an outcast, and that's why you want to go back and you conform to that abuse that is happening in those organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very very, like I said, it's very dangerous. I'm sure there's cults that we haven't heard of that are, you know, out there right now,
or are just actually not created yet. And all those children, the future cult leaders, are just being raised by their parents. And a lot of the times when you find antisocial personalities, and we're not even talking about the psychological problems, right? Some mental problems that people can have. Like if you look at the Charles Manson and got the Kerchin that you said, just recently discussed that.
Yeah, David Koresh.
Oh, Koresh, right. That sounds like Ukrainian last name.
Yeah,
the Southern Eastern European. So if you look at them, they all look alike. look at the crazy eyes. If you just look at that, those eyes, you could perceive that there is a mental instability there.
Yeah.
But just because if we're not trained to see that, we can fall for it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a picture of Koresh. Yeah, he's got almost like you said, those dark serial killer looking eyes.
Yeah.
Your Ted Bundy type eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And you saw the Ted Bundy's interviews.
Oh my God. Yeah. And you can actually see it. You can see when the switch, cause, when I was doing my master's degree, I did a lot of, my papers on antisocial personality disorder. It's, a fascination of mine, psychopaths. And I wish I was better at the hard sciences. Cause I might've, you know, in another life had been like a forensic psychiatrist. I think that would have been really, really cool. I watched so many different videos with Ted Bundy, and you could actually see when the switch would flick. His eyes, I found, would get darker. Like, and his face, like, lost that, you know, that friendly, charismatic, approachable person that he would be when he would get his victims. And he just became like a stone cold killer. Like, it was literally like you could see a flip switch with him, and you could tell when he was in psychopath mode.
Oh, yes. And if you just,
if you study that long enough, you'll be able to pick it up. Like, you know, I would say you're a very good character of that, you know, as well with all your training and your experience, you know?
Yeah. But if you look at his interviews, did you see how he played the detectives? Did you see how he played those people? They were lost. They were lost. And he did not once lost his cool.
Yeah.
So that is a true psychopathy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, he didn't. Oh, my God. Even his prison escapes, or his escapes from the courthouse. Like, they didn't see that coming, you know, when he jumped out the window and went on the run for a while, and they couldn't find him. He was freaking out in the woods and living in a cabin and just trying to survive. Yeah, no, he was very good, and just didn't sweat things. Like, he just had no empathy or no worry at all. He just operated almost like very robotic.
Yes, disregard of any consequences. So yeah. Psychopaths, they wouldn't give a regard for anybody's feelings. So even to have empathy, there's no empathy for psychopaths. There's no feelings.
Yeah. Yep. That's true. I wonder if there's any current UFO cults out there. I haven't been in the UFO game in a while.
Well, Dr. Elliot, move here, and you and I are going to establish a cult, UFO cult here. We're really good at it.
Well, no one would bat an eye, because it seems like California is a big place for cults. So
that's true, right? And the thing is, we here in California, we really erase the edge of pathologies here and present them as not so pathological. Like, for example, we have child molesters here, and they are not tried at all. They're being let go. All they have to do is to register in the community. Pretty soon they wouldn't even have to register in the community. We will never know where they live. But they're not even tried. They let go.
See, that blows my mind, because right now I think you guys have an amazing system. In Canada, we are not allowed to release their name or their photograph unless they've been deemed like a high risk to offend. They're getting released on no conditions. The police know that they're going to attack somebody. Then they will release their name and their photo. But I was down in the States, and I had friends like showing me that there's apps you can download, and like you can see who is in your neighborhood, like on parole and for sexual offenses. I actually think that that's a really good thing. I understand, like, you know, for that person, it's a big invasion of privacy, but.
What? Excuse me. Hold on, Hunter. What? Invasion of privacy for whom? He invaded the privacy of those children.
Well, that's just it. Sure, you know where they live and their address and what they look like, and their photos plastered everywhere. You know, it is a form of an evasion of privacy. But on the other hand, too, they've also committed a criminal offense, been convicted of it, that has gone through, you know, a process. I know some people do get wrongfully convicted, but it's not the commonplace.
But the thing is that they don't even get convicted here, Dr. Elliott. They do not get convicted of that here in California.
So, well, and when they do commit those crimes, you're kind of giving up that right. You know what I mean? That right to your privacy. I think that those apps are a great thing, and it would be terrible, I think, if you guys decided to get rid of it. I wish we had it here so that you just knew like who's around, who's in your neighborhood.
I don't know. With this kind of tendency, we never know what's going to happen in the future. It's becoming a dangerous place to live. You know,
well, society itself is like a pendulum. Like, we'll go from being very conservative to very liberal, and it just kind of keeps coming and going, right? Right now,
there's nothing in between. There was a modernism, and now we live in the times of postmodernism. What is in between?
Yeah, we seem to be in a really bad spot where we've gone. I personally feel like we've gone way too on one side of the pendulum now, where like basically you can call yourself whatever you want and you can pretend to be a dog and not listen to your teachers. And, you know, I don't know. It's gotten so crazy now. I think we need to kind of take that pendulum back a little bit more.
Yeah. Or just move into mountains away from the civilization.
Oh, I know. I tell Sarah all the time, the first rocket to Mars. That's signing us up.
Why Mars? You know, when humans step on Mars, they will bring all of the stuff that they invented here, all of the nasty governments, manipulation. So it is not going to be a nice, benevolent society that you think of. It is always going to be something wherever we go, we take ourselves with us.
Well, we talk about that because Justin Trudeau right now is not the majority of Canadians' favorite prime minister because of all of his policies. And right now, the next runner-up is Pierre Poilievre, who's a conservative. And like Sarah said, his platform sounds really good. His speeches are really good. But once they get into power, they all tend to fall into the same thing. You know, because you are at the top and you're being given benefits, like your trips are paid for, your flights are paid for, it's very easy for corruption to settle in. And I think you're right. I think eventually if we did go to Mars and established a colony there, I think you would see the same thing. At the end of the day, somebody would have to be in charge, and you're probably going to see the same behaviors. I think, what's that old saying, that power corrupts?
Always. Yep. Yeah.
And we see that. Everyone does their friends solid favors. Even when Trump was president, you know, he'd stay at his hotels, which in Canada would be considered a conflict of interest, because the U.S. government would be paying his hotels, his businesses, and he's making a profit off of it. Whereas like up here, that would be considered a conflict of interest. You'd have to stay at a property that wasn't owned by Trump Enterprises. But you can just see that, yeah, you're going to have the same issues, I think, eventually if humans do establish there.
Yeah. I don't actually know if U.S. government paid for that. I don't have any information on that. I know that Trump did not get any salary. So
maybe he didn't charge the he might not have. I know he didn't take a salary, so perhaps he stayed there at the cost. But even in Canada, though, like that would be considered a conflict of interest. They would not allow you to stay at your own hotel.
Yeah.
Which is, but again, and Trudeau's no better. He's given contracts to all his friends and buddies and stuff like that. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to run a fair process. It kind of goes back to that cult mentality, you know, the power. You get into that position of power and you start to push your influence onto the people below you.
Absolutely. So all of those novels about utopian societies, they are non-existent. There will be dystopian societies because as humans, we are greedy and manipulative.
It's Yeah, it's in our nature.
So we go to colonize Mars, and that's it. Have you ever thought that if you were given this kind of power, what would you have done? You would establish.
I talk to Sarah all the time about what I would do if I was prime minister. I've got a whole agenda.
Say the president.
Yeah. I tell Sarah that all the time. I said, if I was the prime minister, there'd be changes, because we see stuff like from the ground level. Like, for example, our cost of living has been going through the roof. And we look at somebody like Sarah's parents that are getting close to retiring, and they're going to start getting the Canada Pension Plan, which would be, I think, equivalent to your guys' 401k. It's a retirement thing that the government has. And you get old age security, but it's very minimal. It's like, I think old age security might be like $1,700 a month. And I think CPP, depending on like how long you worked and how much you contributed, you know, maybe that's another grand. So you've got like maybe, you know, anywhere from $2,500 to $2,700 coming in per month. And you look at the cost of rent here, it's like, you know, a 2-bedroom is like $2,000 a month. That leaves you with like $500 to $700 to survive. I know when I go to the grocery store lately for just the three of us, it's costing me like $400 every 2 weeks. So it's not going to take you very long to run out of, you know, that money. And so I always talk about, you know, if I was prime minister, I would look at like increasing things like that for our seniors. I would stop sending money overseas to other countries. I would keep it, you know, within Canada, because there's so much work to do within Canada, whether it's our education system or health system. I've got a whole agenda, but I just
we'll vote for you.
I don't want to run.
Well, now see what happened with George Galloway in England.
Mm.
So he's elected now, and thank God that he is, because now I have the faith in humanity. I don't know if you've been following that or not, but seriously, that people who have the interests of humanity and their own people at their heart are the best. So I believe in you. Why don't you just run? I can't even vote for you because I'm a Canadian
so much more I want to do with the paranormal. I don't have the time.
You will stream all that money to me, and I will run the organization, and then we will see how benevolent it is going to be.
Maybe one thing I would do as prime minister would be put more funding into parapsychological research. I'd make that a priority.
That would be great. Well, we had a fantastic and terrific conversation here. Unfortunately, our time is coming to an end. I just wanted to say a couple of words in conclusion. The terrible truth about religious cults is that they prey on the vulnerable, exploit their followers, and leave a trail of devastation in their wake. While some may offer the promise of spiritual enlightenment or community, the reality is far darker, with people and families paying a steep price for their involvement. So, recognizing the warning signs of cults and providing support to those who have been ensnared is crucial in combating their influence and protecting vulnerable people from harm. We are thanking everyone for joining us today on United Public Radio Network 107.7 FM from beautiful New Orleans. It has been Science and the Paranormal with incredible Dr. Elliot and not less incredible myself, Dr. Yana. Like my dad says, if you don't praise yourself, nobody will. So you better do it yourself.
No, everyone loves Dr. Yana. She's a great co-host. Next week, we're going to talk about, it'll be Dr. Yana and I again, and we're going to talk about sleep disorders and sex in the paranormal. We're gonna talk a little bit about incubus, succubus, sleep paralysis. So should be pretty fascinating. We'll even get into some really weird topics.
So come join us. You don't want to miss it. And ask us questions, because
and if you guys have any questions as well, don't forget we have our website, which is scienceandparanormalpodcast.com, and also our email scienceandtheparanormal@ppri.net. Feel free to send us an email. And for anyone that's listening in there, there are support organizations out there as well to help plan somebody's exit from a cult. So certainly you can do some research on there. There are some support groups started by people that have escaped cults out there for anyone that you know that might be struggling or you know, could use a helping hand.
That's right.
On that note, I look forward to next Tuesday.
And we're wishing you a good night. So Dr. Elliot, go hit the sack. And I will do the same. And so many people are already asleep, except if they are in Europe. They're just starting their day. Well, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
See you next Tuesday.
Have a good night.
Good night.